This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Our body keeps somatic traces of all our traumatic experiences. When exposed to a stimulus that reminds the body of a past danger, the viscerosomatic memory linked to this danger is reactivated, creating the base of a disruptive emotional response. Emotional resolution, MRES, helps the body recognize that the perceived danger is nowadays obsolete. MRES allows the body to integrate traumatic information and to tune into our current reality instead of reacting through a past memory. To do this, we commit to experiencing the viscerosomatic response without controlling our physical sensations or our environment. MRES connects you to the origin of a difficult emotion through your physical sensations and modulates the unwanted emotional response permanently. This simple yet rarely used psychologic capacity is innate to all human beings. Valeria interviews Cedric Bertelli. He is a recognized expert in emotional resolution, MRES, a revolutionary approach to emotional healing that has transformed the lives of countless individuals. As the founder and director of the Emotional Health Institute, Cedric has dedicated his career to helping people overcome stress, anxiety, depression, PTSD, and other debilitating emotional patterns using the MRES body of work. At the Emotional Health Institute, Cedric and his team provide trainings and education to mental health professionals, coaches, and educators, helping them to integrate emotional resolution into their practices. In addition, Cedric works directly with clients, providing individualized support and guidance to help them overcome emotional challenges and improve their overall well-being. Meet Cedric at emotionalhealthinstitute.org and cedricbertelli.com. Here's the interview with Cedric Bertelli.
Who is Cedric in his own words?
So yeah, you asked me that. Thank you for having me, Valeria. Thank you very much. I think what I would say is I'm an alive being. Mm.
Yeah. Wow. That's simple. Yeah.
I think so.
That's the closest. I think the shortest answer I got before from somebody was, I am life. Oh, I'm here. Mm-hmm. That's refreshing because we usually don't think of ourselves as I'm alive, I'm here. We have all this story, right? Lots of stories in our heads, you know, from the past and then projected in the present, as we talked briefly off record, and then the future. So the work you do is extremely interesting, inspiring. I love the title, Emotional Resolution. Emotional freedom comes to mind, emotional well-being. And it's really what we are looking for. It has been my own journey for so long, suffering unnecessarily because of emotions, trapped emotions in the body. And I can't say that I'm free from them at this point. Not the body, but I would say, or the mind. But there's something in me that recognizes that, or when they arise and then I don't respond from them. And sometimes I do, but I still catch myself. So I guess that the open question, going straight to that point, do we really become free from negative and debilitating emotions?
It's a great question. And that's often a question that people ask me is like, if you resolve your emotion, do you become emotionless? Yes, we can free ourselves from debilitating emotional patterns. All those emotions that keeps on coming back, toxifying our life. All those reactions that come from the past. I will say that the ultimate goal of my work is for us to feel the emotions that are congruent with our current reality, instead of reacting from past experiences. Because all those emotions that come from the past, in a way, they're stealing away our current life. You know, we're missing out so much emotions, painful, but wonderful emotions as well, available to us right now because of things that haven't been integrated from the past.
So true. And a lot of times we are not aware of that. We are just going with the flow. Or we believe that that's what we are. That's what we have become. And that's it. There's no ending. And I hear that a lot from, in my own family, from older people. This is how I am. I can't change. You cannot. They use an expression. You cannot teach an old dog new tricks. They say that even. So, this is something that's not true, right, Cedric? Anyone can change, and it's not too late at any age.
Correct. But you need to have the will to do so.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's easier to say that's where I am. I'm an angry man. I'm an anxious person. I am a victim. I am unlucky. You can go on and on. Yeah. It's comfortable even because it becomes part of our personality. So we have an abusive relationship with ourselves, you know, in a way. And often in abusive relationship, we don't want to come out of them, even if they're abusive, because they're comfortable. Because people relate to us through this character, this persona that we put out there. So it does take courage and will to actually accept, this is not me. What does that mean? That's me. No, that's something that built over time, maybe very early on from my parents, my education, my beliefs, religion, whatever. But that's not me at the essence. I can stop and question and then start to resolve things that do not serve me.
Right. Wow. Beautifully said. Clearly said. Yes, we are identified with our personalities, right? The way it has formed and where we are now. True. And it feels very comfortable. I love the way you talked about relationship. It's almost like having a relationship. So it's not easy to break up, right? With that identity. That might be the hardest thing. That's what I'm really very much interested in spirituality, which has to do with identity very much. We very quickly learn that we are not what we think we are. So that has been my training. So it was easier for me coming from that spiritual understanding, knowledge, realization to the emotional realm. So it's easier now to see everything as just passing. It's not really something that I am. In a real sense, it's not. I know spirituality sounds for a lot of people as an abstract thing, not as something that what you're saying, you were speaking of here, emotional resolution as a practical tool. But for me, it has been the case, Cedric. It really has. Like this understanding that I'm not the body mind. So that changed everything.
It's key.
This is not something that it's not included. Is that something that you also tap in when it comes to the emotional resolution work? Do you tap into belief systems? Or actually, I have to ask you the question how it works before. I should have asked you before, but that comes to mind immediately. Do you tap into belief systems, or this is something that it comes later?
I guess people, most of the time, people do not come to see us for beliefs. They start to work on beliefs when they notice that the emotional body, so to speak, that the emotions are malleable.
Yes.
When people start to do the work either way on themselves or with a practitioner, when they start to understand that they're not their emotions. I often tell people we're a bunch of haunted houses. I'm in a haunted house, you're in a haunted house. We are moving around with our ghosts from our past. Sometimes we're aware of them, often we're not. And they show up in our behavior, in our relationship with others, with work, with money, it doesn't matter. But we have all those ghosts inside of us. Mm. And a lot of us do not question the ghost.
Right.
That's the way the house is. Right. But when we start to look at the ghost, the one that are obvious, the anxiety, the depression, the anger, the resentment, the self-worth, the obvious ghost, the one that we don't like. And we see then this one can start to be resolved, malleable, sent back to the past.
Right.
Acknowledge, send back where they belong. Then people start to question their belief, or we're gonna invite them to question their beliefs. And there's a lot of fear that goes around that. So we're not going to attack the belief right away. We're going to maybe go around, if you lose this belief, what are you afraid of? Who are you if you don't have this belief?
So it is a process.
So yes.
Yeah, it's a process, of course. Yeah.
And it can be fast for some people or longer for others. We're all different.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Interesting of what you mentioned earlier about being open, right? Being willing to do the work. This is something that I find to be fascinating for some of us, that we almost get used to it, you know, to unnecessary suffering. And it really it amazes me that, you know, I did in the past, and I see some people in my family, friends doing the same. They're so used to suffering in a certain way that they don't question. There's no investigation That's into right. that. So I have to ask you this question too. So what is your backstory, Cedric? How did you come to this understanding, you know, to this emotional resolution, to develop something like this? What inspired you?
So first of all, I got to say, emotional resolution is something that I created by myself. It's a teamwork. Mm. It's years of experiences from Jacques Fumex, a doctor in gastroenterology in France, Didier Godot, myself, inspired by other people such as Jean-Paul Rességuier. I mean, all these are French names, but I want to put them out there. It's a global work, I will say, and I think what we are teaching and practicing, you said it yourself, which was very simple, is everywhere. In a lot of literatures, in philosophies, in everywhere. I think our strength was to take all those theories and bring it into a pragmatic, lived methodology, I would say. Something simple, cutting from the chase. How did I get there? I think a quick answer would be like, my early life emotionally, even if I had a very good childhood, inside was hell because of anxiety, because of self-direct anger for quote-unquote no good reasons. And that's the thing as well. Often we wonder, why do we feel that way if we didn't have a strong trauma? It doesn't matter. But I guess I came to it because I was not feeling good emotionally, and I learned to cope with it. I learned to control it. I learned to hide it. No one around me would have ever known it. Know that. But it's seeking for something for myself. And as I mentioned earlier today with you, is also observing the resilience process from men and women who lived World War II. That was very inspirational. Looking at other mammals' process and how they do not hold on to trauma, except domestic animals and some farm animals. Strangely enough, animals are in contact with human beings.
Right.
And then also looking at the work of Lisa Feldman Barrett and Antonio Damasio in the neuroscience of emotion, reading a lot about philosophy, Baruch Spinoza, Maurice Merleau-Ponty, Henry Bergson, all those philosophers that talk about the body, the mind, the emotions.
Wow.
So that's a long answer. But
yes. So yeah. You've been there. You have the experience, and you're open to learn more, investigate, and go deeper into it to this point of passing on the beautiful news that it can change. Can happen, that we can do something about our negative emotions. You call debilitating 100%. Emotions. I kind of resonate with that word, debilitating, in a sense of it's something that gets in the way of happiness, of joy, of love, of freedom, just being here in the moment. And I know I talked about being in the moment off record. We talked briefly, and you said that it's true that we bring our past into the present moment. That's something that we often do. So how does it work? What would be the first step? What's the process like? The audience would love to know that.
Sure. First, I want to state a fact that is not known by many people. What is a debilitating emotional pattern? An emotional pattern that keep on coming back, but do not have any ground in our present, I would say. Debilitating emotional patterns are nothing else but outdated predictions from the brain. That we know neuroscientifically, I'm going to repeat it, debilitating emotional patterns are outdated or obsolete predictions from the brain. Now, we update predictions from the brain constantly. This is how we learn. We learn new things. We learn how to drive. It's an update. Everything. So why some emotions or some, let's say emotions, are not being updated? Well, I can tell you, we know. First, how is an emotional pattern created, a debilitating emotional pattern? We know that at the origin of every one of our disruptive emotional pattern is an instant of trauma. Now, what is a trauma? In my book, a trauma is an instant that holds too much stress for us to take on, physical or emotional, at the instant when we experience it. That's it. It's just too much physically or emotionally at the instant. That's a trauma. What is happening during an instant of trauma, there's a phenomena of dissociation. Basically, the cognitive shutdown, so we don't suffer too much during this instant of pain. Now, the prefrontal cortex, the cognitive, has many functions, but one of them is to filter information. What you and I were aware of is about 2,000 bits of information per second, processed at a speed of about 100 to 150 miles per hour. That's what we are aware of. At the same time, our subconscious has a potential to gather 400 billion bits of information per second, processed at a speed of 150,000 miles per hour. So what is happening during an instant of dissociation is that the cognitive shutdown and the subconscious is wide open. During this instant of dissociation, the subconscious is going to gather a whirlpool, a mass, which is not understandable cognitively, of information, all sensorial. What you smell, what you feel, what you taste, what you see, and also the physical sensations happening in your body during this instant of pain. Right. Wow. But in a way that is completely non-linear. It doesn't make any sense. And it is at a such high, I would say, intensity that it's not understandable cognitively. Now, what is happening is that when the body as a whole later on is in the presence of one or several elements that were present during one of our past trauma, in a non-logical way still, our brain and body is going to predict what physical sensations you're about to feel based on what felt during the corresponding trauma. Those physical sensations are generated by the brain. We call that interoception. That's what lets us know that we're feeling an emotion, right? I know that I'm feeling anxious because I have sensations in my body. I know that I'm feeling angry because I have sensations in my body. Those physical sensations were the physical sensations that were experienced during a specific trauma. The problem with that is every time we feel those physical sensations, as human beings, we control them. Either way, we act on them. If we are angry, maybe we punch something, we scream, we bottle it down. If we're anxious, we take some breath. And when we learn to control our emotions very early on with tons of coping mechanism. And that's the problem. We never let the interoceptive prediction playing out until the end. That's what we do with MRS. We create I would say, an environment outside for the client and inside, so that the prediction, the sensorial prediction, the interoceptive prediction can play out until the very end without any type of control from the practitioner or from the client, the person suffering.
Wow.
At the end of the prediction, that never lasts more than 90 seconds, 90. At the end of the prediction, the brain is anticipating to be hit by some kind of danger. At the end of the prediction, nothing happens. We're all safe and sound. From that very instant, the prediction will be updated instantly and permanently.
Wow. That sounds wonderful. I have heard before that trauma is an incomplete experience. The perception,
right?
That's incomplete. That's exactly what you're saying. So because we are not allowing the experience to be completed, then it keeps coming back, looping back, trying to do that, exactly right. That, to complete itself. How amazing. So how going, can you go through the process of getting to do it? Like, can we apply this technique to ourselves? So do we need, I know you have trainers. I know you have lots of people that can do that, that are certified. And you do that yourself too, right, Cedric?
Sure, also, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, but talk to me about, like, even before we begin, are there preparations? Do we write down the emotions that we want to access and complete and heal them? How does it work, this from the beginning to the end, before, during, and after the technique?
Yep. Okay. Very well. Very well. So yes, there are several ways to do emotional resolution. Absolutely. You can learn to do it on yourself, by yourself. You can do it with a practitioner. It's up to you. I would say that there are many emotions that we can take care by ourselves, and other emotions that are easier to access with the practitioner, because you need to fully surrender to what's happening inside of you. And sometimes it's difficult to do that by oneself. For emotions such as shame, guilt, resentment, all those emotions that build upon emotions, it is easier to access with the presence of a practitioner that is trained. Because that's the thing about human beings, right? We don't feel only one emotion. We build emotion upon emotion very quickly. Anger, then guilt, then shame, then resentment, etc. And this happened in 5 seconds or an hour. Yeah. Very quickly. Yeah. So, but already the big emotions that are in our face, I often say, the one that we are willing to look at, your question is very well formulated. Often the mistake is to try to resolve too many emotions at once. That doesn't work. You do nothing. My advice will be, have in mind one emotion that you know you want to resolve, one at a time. When you experience, the most natural way to do emotional resolution is to do it when you feel the emotion. That's the way that any other animals does it. Do it.
Right.
When you feel the emotion, it's not a problem. It's an opportunity. When we feel the emotion we want to resolve, it's like a time machine. I mean, imagine. Maybe what I'm feeling in my body now was what I felt in my body when I was 2 days old.
Yeah.
The same sensation. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
It's the same sensation. Doesn't matter when the trauma happened. Doesn't matter if I know what it is. Most of the time we don't know what it is, and that's fine. We don't need to know what it is. But my body is generating the same sensation that were felt a while ago, very long time, maybe in utero sometimes. When I feel this emotion, the first thing that I'm going to do is, I'm going to give you that pragmatically.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to do is to close my eyes. So why do I close my eyes? To shut down the outside? Okay, but that's not the main reason. It's important to be able to close your eyes and feel comfortable to close your eyes.
Yeah.
If you're not comfortable to close your eyes, it means that your body doesn't feel safe.
Right.
We learn that working with horses and cows. The first sign of fear in any mammal is that we stop blinking. So human beings are no different. If you're in a space where you have a hard time keeping your eyes closed and you want to peek, you want to, your mind knows intellectually that you're safe, but your body doesn't feel safe. If your body doesn't feel safe, the resolution is not going to happen.
Mm, I understand.
That means if I'm afraid of spider, there's a spider 2 meters away on the wall. I guarantee you that if I have arachnophobia, I'm going to want to look at that spider. Even if I know that the spider is not going to jump on me.
Exactly.
I have meanness. Oh, yeah. But it's too much for me to keep my eyes closed and be peaceful about that. I need to move a little bit so my body can actually feel the fear and be able to close the eyes without any difficulty. So that's first thing. I feel my emotion. Okay, I feel it. I close my eyes and I can close my eyes without any problem, without wanting to look or without wondering what people might think. No, I've closed my eyes. The next step is to pay attention to our physical sensations. So here it's important to pay attention to two or three sensations at once. Why? Because if I only pay attention to one sensation, it leaves room for my cognitive to think.
Yeah.
If I start thinking, the resolution is not going to happen. Because if I start thinking, if I lack attention, I'm going to have an emotion, I'm going to have a thought that might create a new emotion. And then you start all those emotions because the brain goes so fast that you're going nowhere fast.
Right.
So you need to have an intense attention into your flesh, into the physical sensations. You need to feel two or three sensations at once. Attention is important. So much attention that there is no thought. And the next step is more difficult. It is that the sensations are going to start changing inside. Of course, it's a prediction.
Yeah.
So the prediction is going to play out. Yeah. And the most difficult part is to do nothing.
Mm.
And when I say to do nothing, I voice it that way very specifically. It's an action. Because if we become passive, just waiting for the sensations to go away, nothing's going to happen. You need to create almost an hermetic space, hermetic of thoughts. You feel the sensations, so feeling is an action. Feel the sensations as they change in your body, even if they become uncomfortable. The sensation might become uncomfortable a little bit, sure, but they're not new. You experiencing them in your life anyway, just this time you're conscious of them. And you need to feel the sensations in your body simultaneously for as long as they are evolving, changing inside of you, transforming. This will take between 2 seconds and 90 seconds. 90. At the end of the interoceptive prediction, you will feel a sense of neutrality. That's it.
Wow. That sounds amazing to me. It really makes a lot of sense, the entire process. And one of the things that, one of the questions that I had for you here too, it's what's the difference between a feeling and an emotion? So I think you explained that. So feelings are just sensations in the body, and emotions relate to patterns in the brain, outdated patterns from the past. Is that, how would you describe it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, depending if we talk about having a feeling or feeling, the action of feeling. The difference between a feeling and an emotion, I wouldn't know how to express it. I wouldn't know how to explain it exactly. Having a feeling will be, for me, a link to intuition. But then again, we have to be careful. So many times we think we have an intuition, which is actually fear-based.
Right. So true.
Right? So is it an intuition or is it fear-based? I don't know. Mm. You know, we have to, I know for myself, but and it's, even sometimes it's not clear. I have to do some introspection, far from being perfect. But yes, for me, feeling what's happening in the body is an intense action. And feeling what's happening in the body, for me, it's a bit like when you experience an emotion, let's say anger or anxiety, and you stay in the anxiety, it's like surfing the wave of anxiety, surfing the wave of anger. You go nowhere. You're going to keep on surfing for a lifelong. You've got to dissolve your attention within your body. It's like in the ocean. either way, you surf the wave or you immerse yourself in the ocean and you feel the currents within you, the current that create the wave. The wave is just a consequence. Mm. The wave doesn't matter. It's just to let you know that there is an emotion. Now, boom, inside. Intensely feel what's going on, but do not disturb it. Feel until there's nothing to feel anymore. Right.
What a beautiful invitation. This is actually was the, after interviewing so many people, therapists, psychotherapists here, and spiritual teachers too, that was the message to me. That's why I created this platform that's called The Freedom to Feel, because they kept repeating that, you know, the key is to feel. You need to feel. You need to let the feelings come and go. And that stayed with me. That's so true. I guess the challenge is to kind of know the difference of what is real, what's happening in this moment that's worth my attention or it's worth my acting upon it. So that's something that I keep asking. In my case, I always ask for truth because I'm a truth lover. So I'm always asking for truth. What, you know, what am I to see here? I keep asking that question. But that's my practice. And when it comes to your work, it's just emotion resolution. How amazing, the whole process. And you mentioned that we can apply this to ourselves, but it's kind of limited when it comes to certain emotions, right, Cedric, as you said, if they become more complex, so we need help.
It's better to have help just because I often compare this work into the hero journey, right? We have to jump in the mouth of the monster, of the dragon. Yeah. And sometimes it's counterintuitive. And sometimes we don't want to see the dragon.
We just don't want to see it anymore. And
we don't want to see it. It's right there, but we don't want to see it. So it's the work of the practitioner to actually bring it up in a session for just a second, just enough so that the sensations are here, so that the person can actually go inside of it.
Yes, and stay there. Let me pause for a moment, Cedric. I'm getting a message of internet reconnection, but I think we're recording fine. I don't see any problems, but it's asking me, it's giving me a message here, but I think we are good because I can see you clearly and we are recording. So
me
going
too.
Back.
Yeah,
so yes, the invitation for all of us is spiritual freedom. I mean, emotional freedom, which has to do with spiritual freedom. To me, they're all connected. Healing in all aspects go back to that sense of freedom, which to me, that is spiritual. So going back to your work, I know you speak of, I saw a section in your website that had a spiritual well-being, spiritual is always next to me. So emotional well-being, emotional health, emotional resolution training, emotional health training, emotional blockage release. So in anxiety treatment, the emotional blockage caught my attention. Can you talk to me for a moment about that? What's the difference between emotional blockage and what do you do exactly there, and emotional blockage release?
So for me, a blockage is when we freeze, right? We freeze. We feel like we cannot do it. We feel like we are not in charge of ourselves anymore. We disappear. We blocked, and that definitely is an emotion. It's created by a lot of tension in the body, you know. So it's sometimes people have a hard time with the word emotions, right? Especially men, we don't want to talk about emotions. So we try to find all the terms, but it's all fear. Mm. You know, at the end of the day, it's all fear. And if we go a bit deeper than that, it is always on a very primal level, a fear of death. Always. So blockages are those blocks that do not allow us to thrive, that do not allow us to relate the way that we should in order to be happy. I love that you talk a lot about joy. For me, the level, the normal level of being is joy. It doesn't mean happy. It doesn't mean euphoric. It means joy. It means content. Being content.
Yes, it was also one of my questions. What's the goal of emotion resolution? So you would say joy, right? So we have access.
That's right. Joy and being able to really feel the emotions congruent to our reality. That means if someone is passing, I lost my grandfather two months ago.
Sorry to hear that.
And am I going to feel joy then? And no, I'm going to feel grief. But I'm going to feel grief.
Yes.
I'm going to feel it in a raw way.
Yes.
And you know what I don't feel anymore? Are all the me emotions, the anger, all those emotions that cut us from the emotion that should be experienced.
Ah.
You know, people who carry grief for years, they do not carry grief. They carry emotions that are purely related to themselves. You know, and that's not grief. All those me emotions, I call them parasites emotions. All those parasites emotions cut us from grief, for example. It's a lot. It's like this in a lot of part of our lives. We have wound inside that steal away the experience of life.
Wow, that's insightful to hear and very clear to me. So you say, would you use the term self-pity? This feeling sorry for myself and
holding. Yeah, self-pity, anger, victim. And it's not, I'm not being judgmental in saying that. If we feel that way, it's because at some point we were hurt.
Yeah.
But these are the emotions that can be resolved. Grief, for example, cannot be resolved. Grief has to be experienced.
Yes. So that's a natural emotion, right?
That's right.
And would you say that, you know, a question that I often ask is about anger. Is anger justified, natural in some cases? I don't think I get angry, but I do get, I get very sad, I would say, even upset when I see injustice. You know, somebody abusing children or animals, something happens in me. Oh, it's just this. God, it's the feeling that's not, it's a very strong feeling. And it feels like anger, but I don't think it is. So I'm wondering if anger, it is a natural feeling too when faced with unfairness and injustice.
You know, I think one of the problems is that we're limited with our words. When we see injustice and we're being torn inside, that's congruent with what's happening. When I'm a father, if I hear that somebody's daughter have been hurt in any way, I'm going to have a reaction. I'm going to feel it in my body, but it's not going to stay.
Right.
I'm not going to ruminate on it. I'm not going to chew on it. I'm going to feel it. It's going to be because it's tapped into my integrity, it's congruent with the way I see life and I resonate with life, of course I'm going to feel something.
Yes.
But I'm not going to go into a rampage and no. I will feel it, I will integrate it, and then I will live on.
Right.
But if I have to take actions, I will not take action from anger.
Right.
I will take action because that doesn't fit in the way that I want to live my life. So again, I'm far from being like this all the time. I'm not claiming that in any way, but that's what the work is all about.
Yes, right. So in a way, it is a constant practice. It's something. So emotional resolution is something that we can use as a practice, a daily practice. Even if we feel that we don't have any of these extreme traumatic trapped emotions in our bodies, it's something that it could happen because I think we always experience traumas, you know, even the little ones, but it depends how sensitive we are. Like I'm very sensitive. I think my spiritual practices kind of has helped me a lot to become less sensitive to unkindness, for example. I'm very sensitive to unkindness, to injustice and all that. But not, and you're right, it's not to the point of getting angry or acting from that place. But there is, to me, it always goes back to contemplation and reflection. Like you know, asking questions, deep questions. Why is this happening? You know, what's the truth here? And why do we, if everything is God, if everything is freedom, why do we feel like we are not free? Why do we suffer if everything is love? So these questions come to me when I'm faced with those things. But yeah, the sensation in the body, the feelings are, they are here. And I love your message about not ignoring them, always letting them complete itself, to come and go.
That's right.
That's what I have learned to do. And you're right, it's easier said than done. It is an interesting work. That's, you know, it takes courage. It takes a lot of courage.
But it's worth it, because when you do it, I mean, it's when I said that an emotion is resolved, a debilitating pattern is resolved, I mean it.
Yeah.
I mean that if you go with it, it will not come back. What used to be a stimulus will not be a stimulus anymore. Yeah. Now, is it a practice that you can do on a daily basis? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't like to call it a practice or a technique, because if we try to apply a practice or a technique, it becomes work. For me, it's an hygiene of life.
Mm.
It's like, okay, as you said at the beginning, recognizing that there is something that is toxic in a way for me or for my surroundings. Okay, accepting it. That's the most difficult part.
Oh, yeah.
To accept that there is something in me.
Sure.
And then, boom, meeting it, be intimate with it and resolve it. MRS will not resolve something that is not to be supposed to be there.
Ah, yeah.
I mean, we can't resolve something that is supposed to be there at the instant.
Yes.
So, and then you said something interesting as well. So we only have labels for big emotions.
Yeah.
Emotion that we understand, but all day long, we are crossed by tensions.
Yeah.
Tensions that create the dynamic of our life without us realizing it. Let's say you and I meet, and when I meet you, my body undergo tensions. I don't realize it, I just have a feeling. We talked about feeling earlier. I feel uncomfortable, so I'm going to make a story.
Mm.
Ah, Valeria, there's something about her. There's nothing to do with you. Maybe it's your smell that I don't even smell, but my brain recognizes as a smell that was present during one. Maybe it's your general shape, maybe it's your voice, maybe it's something else. And because there's something in you, like this, in your being, that trigger, that is a stimulus for me, I'm going to make up stories, and I'm not going to question my story.
Yeah.
When actually, it's only tension. It has nothing to do with you.
Wow. That's very good to clarify, too, because a lot of us tend to believe our feelings very much and create stories. Yeah, we believe them, and then we just go on with them and create this whole idea, this whole new life. I liked what you said earlier too about the haunted house too. You know, all the ghosts and all. That's so true, though. You know, I have to tell you that some of them stayed with me. Some traumas that I experienced in childhood, I went through abuse, physical, emotional abuse. So that I can feel them still. Like they come and they go. And I wonder if they, and I have done a lot of work, healing work, but they never went away completely. It's just that now it's very clear to me that they're still here, attached to, not to a story, because there's no stories anymore, but it feels like the body, like you said, when I see somebody, when I meet somebody that reminds me of that person in the past who, when I was a child, that abused me, then it comes back. Like, I'm in danger. The body automatically tenses up. But then I just release the story and I move forward. I'm not afraid.
Yep.
And then that dissolves. But I wonder if that, so you're saying that would go away if I, right, that if I go through the process with emotional resolution, even that that first, let's say, outdated response for the brain, it would resolve. That's incredible, though, because I have done a lot of work already.
Yeah, it will. So again, human beings are complex.
Yeah.
And not you, because you've done a lot of work in a sense, but it's like these reactions that you talked about that toxify, in a way, your life or other people's life. Yes, it can be resolved. But then we might have to ask the question, is the person willing to let it go? or is there an attachment? Do you want to remember in a way, in a subconscious way, of what happened? Are you or the person willing? Because it's not because we're going to resolve this reaction that it takes any value away from what you experienced as a child.
Right.
And also, but some people sometimes place some value even on today's reaction because they don't want to forget, or because they feel like if they don't feel it, they might forget. That's not the case.
Wow. Yeah.
That's not the case. What you lived, you lived. It's in you forever. But now the tension that you described, that's not necessary.
Right.
In a way, whatever happened to you in childhood, keep on coming back and hurting you over and over again. For what? And maybe this person that now make your body react a certain way, maybe this person is a great person.
Yeah.
You know. So yes, it can be.
So even if that person, it really does remind me. I have had some people within my family members that they do remind me, though. The personality, the way they behave, it's very similar to like an abuser. They actually are seen in a family as somebody who is considered to be an abuser. So my body reacts immediately to that in a very powerful way, but I do not give, let's say there's no more stories and I don't hold back. I'm not afraid. Although, of course, there's always, boundaries, because I know them. I have the knowledge. Yes. Knowledge is very important. So I'm always, not just analyzing behavior, but I want to know the people that I interact with. I need to know who they are. But it's interesting that you said that something that can be released. So the body can release those imprints. So I don't have to keep having this reaction with people that are probably good people. They are not abusers.
And also, if I may, Valeria, if we release this reaction you have, you're fully in your power. Mm. Right? Because in a way, these people, whether they want it or not, if they create this reaction, they still have power over us.
Oh.
I'm very short. I'm a very short man. And so for the longest time, I couldn't deal with bigger guys than me because I was bullied as a kid a lot.
Mm.
And just the fact that they were bigger than me, that was creating this. And that doesn't make any sense. What I mean is, by resolving the trace left in your body, you're fully integrating the experience of what happened. That means that you learn from it.
Right.
That means that you're fully in power. So if you know this person, they don't have any effect on you physically, but you know who you're dealing with. Now you become in power. They have no power over you. You don't have to control yourself. You are at the head of the game.
Right. And that's very important, especially for women,
yeah.
Women and men, of course. Yeah, I'm sorry about what you went through too.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, that's you see, but that's also a natural feeling, right, Cedric? The empathy and compassion. That's something that often arises. Like I feel sad in the moment when I hear stories of abuse, and because something that I have experienced. So I think that's something that the body and mind have learned that, okay, because you have suffered so much from this, now I have learned to be compassionate towards others and empathetic. And I love that lesson. It's a beautiful one, because who knows, maybe if I never had, I'm not grateful for what I went through, but if I had not been through that, who knows, maybe I would have been somebody closer. We have seen people who don't have the ability to feel, like psychopaths, sociopaths. They you can tell them anything, horrible things that you went through. They don't have feelings for it because they cannot relate to others. They can't connect. So I think the lesson or the growth from my traumas has been empathy. And that's something that it's priceless, isn't it? It's something that we need as humans. I mean, we don't need the suffering to learn that, but it's important that we learn that lesson specifically from trauma. It's been my case. But I would love to release that, this tension, you know. I would love that. And that's an invitation. When I came across your work, emotional resolution was just, I had a smile on my face, like how amazing that is. Like emotional, this is freedom. We're talking about freedom here. That's what we need. So yes, I feel free from the level of the mind. when it comes to stories and spiritually, but the body still holds, to some of the information because I can feel them. So yes, that's an invitation from me. And let me see, not from me, but for me. And I wanted to again mention the, the treatment. So you offer, this could be a treatment for stress, anxiety, depression, PTSD, and other debilitating emotional patterns. I'm reading here. But you also, as I mentioned earlier, you also train, so mental health professionals, coaches, and educators. So anyone who wants to learn more about this method, that'll be wonderful to visit you. I have the websites here, both of them. Let me go back to my page, is emotionalhealthinstitute.org and cedricbertelli.com. I'll have both of them on the podcast page, so it's easy and clickable. But you also train, you also work with clients directly, right, Cedric? That's wonderful to know.
I do.
Do you, is that something that, do you select, do we choose, how do we choose a practitioner? Do we... I would love to know the process of that too, because a lot of people, talk to me about that for a moment.
Of course, if you go to the emotionalhealthinstitute.org website, you will have here a list of certified practitioners. And each practitioner put a little bio about their lives. And so you can, like, people can browse through the profile and decide, you know, who they relate best and who they feel that be the best practitioner for them.
Yes. Okay, so they have that option. I'll have the website here.
Of course.
And my last question for you, I might have others here after, but is emotional resolution for everyone? Would you recommend for everyone or some people it might not be?
No, everyone. Absolutely everyone. Now, if we're completely honest, does everything work for everybody? Absolutely not. You know? If anything was working for everybody, we'll know that.
Yes.
And you'll be lying to say so. Yeah. But yes, it's absolutely for everyone. And if the work doesn't talk to you, or then don't do it anymore.
Yes.
But we're not looking for repeat clients. Mm. I do not have repeat clients. Mm. Very few. And their intention is very different. It's, they're trying to, quote unquote, optimize their emotional state. But most of my clients, I see 2-3 times and that's it. Wow. So there's not this long-term relationship. You know, that's not what we're looking for here. So people come to work on an issue and then they go back to their life and they come back maybe 6 months after if they want to or not. So there's no long-term commitment. It's not the way it works.
Wow.
It's not the way it works.
I love that too about it. Wow. And is that also for children? Is it safe to use children?
After 9 or 10 years old.
9, 10, not for all ages.
It's easier, yeah.
That's good to know. I think I asked all the questions that I had here. I love your work. It's really something that has inspired me. The name itself just caught my attention. I need, my husband needs, my whole family needs, everybody needs it. So, I mean, sadly to say, in a way, it's almost like we are not really doing the work fully, right? Because we get so busy a lot of times with so many things that we, but that's so crucial that we take care of emotions. Like, again, in my case, it's more spiritual. So that's kind of has been incredible to do that work. But what's not to love about what you are offering here?
And I think to your point is like the problem is we are constantly hypnotized. Mm. Like we are hypnotized by work, by the pace of life, so we don't stop and feel.
True.
And so we constantly being, our dynamic are constantly influenced by our tensions and our fears, because we are in a almost in a constant state of hypnosis.
Wow.
The news, the pace of work, being a parent without a community around us, you know, and we have to do everything ourselves.
Yes.
So,
yes. Oh my God. So true.
Let's slow down.
So too, Cedric. Yeah. That's very much a real thing. Yes. That we are hypnotized by our own belief systems. You know, we identified with so many things. Yes. Yes. And you know, a lot of times I wonder if that's also part of life, because I'm always, you know, my main interest is freedom. Like, what is freedom? That's a question for you too. So what is your idea of freedom? What's to be free in general?
To be free in general, not even sure it's possible. To be free, to be free in general will mean that we forget everything we've learned from the beginning. The belief, so we only keep the memory of our experiences when they're without the etap of belief or education even.
Wow.
Then they will be close to freedom. It's we have to we have to I don't know if we have to, but it's going beyond all that, all the education, beyond all the trauma, beyond all the family history even. So going back to a state of complete confusion.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Be able to to be able to experience life for what it is.
Right. Wow.
Which we never do.
So do you actually, is it possible in any way, is it realistic to have that as a goal, to forget all the imprints?
I think everything is possible. Yeah, I think everything is possible. I think everything is possible little by little. Yeah, I think it's possible.
That sounds kind to me, but, the way you said, little by little, right?
Little by little, and still maintaining a family life, a relationship, a way to make money. So the hypnosis of the word is strong.
Yes,
it keeps us in our shema.
Yeah.
So I guess an answer would be trying to find our own ethic and moving from this place always.
Beautifully said, though. I mean, that you went really deep there. I would love to have a conversation on that alone. That idea of freedom just being less identified, hypnotized, and or kind of dance, you know, be in all the worlds at the same time, all realms, but knowing what's true and what's not true. To me, that's really, it might be my idea of freedom, just knowing what's true and what's not true. But even then, it's a question too. What is true, really, right? What's not true? That's another conversation to have. So I want to ask you one more question before we say goodbye that I usually ask everyone here. What three experiences you wish everyone to have before they die, before they lose the body?
Three experiences I wish people to have before they die. Love. Peace of mind. I think it's only two. But I think it'd be pretty good already.
Fair enough. No numbers.
And maybe moving from integrity, from ethic.
Yes.
Without wondering what other people might think.
That sounds wonderful too. I love your work. I love your openness to life. So that's a beautiful contribution to humanity, to be open to that extent of investigating your own emotional movement, dynamics, you know, what's happening, how you relate to the world, or yourself. That takes real courage. And that's the only way we can change this reality, if that's what we want, to make a more peaceful world. It's by changing ourselves. And you have done that. And then now you're helping others to do the same. What a beautiful thing. Thank you so much again, Cedric, for being here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity and for a wonderful conversation. God,
thank you. We'll talk soon. We'll thank be in you, touch again. Bye for now, Cedric.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Cedric Bertelli and his work, please visit emotionalhealthinstitute.org and cedricbertelli.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.